I'm Andrea Loyan, Vermont Edition producer, and I just wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening, and enjoy!
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. It's here. It is finally here. Election Day 2024. I'm guessing many of you are sporting your I voted stickers already or trying to figure out how early you need to sneak out of work to make it to the polls. Others of you mailed in your ballots weeks ago. There are many ways for you to get the election news you need on Vermont Public today. You can follow our live blog throughout the day at vermontpublic.org and see photos from polling stations across the state. We'll have national and local election coverage starting at 4 with All Things Considered. And then at 7, when polls close, I will be back on air alongside senior political correspondent Bob Kinzel to share results as they come in. And on TV, starting at 6 tonight, you can watch a special edition of PBS NewsHour with local election results from Mitch Wortley and Jane Lindholm. But let's get back for now to this present moment. This hour on Vermont Edition, we're going to talk with Vermont Public reporters who are stationed at polling places all across our state. We're also going to hear from New Hampshire journalists about Election Day across northern New England. But first, joining us in the studio is Zoe McDonald, a digital producer here at Vermont Public. She spent the past few months reporting about voting access in Vermont. She's explored the policies that have made Vermont one of the easiest places to vote in the country. But she also found some gaps where certain communities face more barriers to voting than others. Zoe, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, Michaela. Happy Election Day.
Happy Election Day. Listeners, you can join the conversation as well. We would love to hear how voting in Vermont or whatever state you live in now compares to other places you've lived. Give us a call at 800-639-2211 or send us an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Also, just a side note, personal interest here. I know we have a lot of listeners up in Canada. I would love to hear how you all are feeling on Election Day for the U.S. So give us a call if you hear this, 800-639-2211. So Zoe, let's start big picture here. How does Vermont compare to the rest of the United States in terms of access to the ballot?
Yeah, well, Vermont has come a pretty long way in the past decade and even going back before that. The Elections Performance Index, or EPI, from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, ranks states based on their election administration and performance. Experts and election officials refer to it, and for my reporting, I looked at it to help me understand exactly where Vermont is at. And Vermont has ranked among the top 5 states overall since 2016. That's because we've offered options for voters like online registration and automatic registration through the DMV. And we also offer voters online tools around elections through the My Voter page. Our turnout rate is also pretty high considering we are not a battleground state.
What is our turnout rate?
Yeah, in the 2020 presidential election, it was about 73%, which is the highest ever for Vermont. 2020 was also the first general election where Vermont had universal mail-in voting. So I'm really interested in what the turnout rate will be this go-round.
Yeah, 73%. That sounds pretty darn high. So Zoe, one thing I learned recently is that you moved to Vermont from the deep south. Did this have anything to do with your interest into like diving deep into Vermont elections and ballot access?
It absolutely did. I voted in my first Vermont election after moving here last year, and I was just really surprised at how easy it was. I had not registered ahead of time, so I registered and voted on the same day as the election. It was the primary in March, and I still walked out of the polling place in what felt like under 30 minutes. Here, they also don't need my ID every time I show up to vote, which was something I was used to after voting in Mississippi and Alabama, where in that last place, they would actually scan your ID when you checked in to vote. So I just found it pretty remarkable. I even texted my parents about how easy it was. And Michaela, I know you're not originally from Vermont, so I'm curious if you had a similar revelation after your first time voting here.
Well, for one, I mean, Vermont is a very small state, so I feel like if you're trying to pretend you're somebody you're not when you show up to vote, somebody, your neighbor's going to be there and call you out for it. But I moved here from Washington, D.C., so the biggest change for me is that Washington, D.C. doesn't have voting representation in Congress. So I moved here and gained two senators and a voting representative. So that was very exciting for me. And Zoe, as you know, and as any other Vermonter knows, this is a really rural area of the country. Does that affect access to the ballot?
Yeah, that speaks to one of the issues that kind of came up whenever I was looking into sort of barriers that people might face whenever they kind of get to or try to get to the polls, and that's transportation. So, you know, we do offer – there are public transportation options in and around more populated parts of Vermont. You know, you think about Green Mountain Transit here, which, you know, for its part is seeing cuts to some of its commuter routes. And there are options in more rural parts of the state. You know, you think about like rural community transportation in the Northeast Kingdom. But, you know, still a lot of smaller communities aren't covered. And then there's sort of that like short distance need of, you know, someone just might need a ride from their house to the polling place. And that's something you might need to schedule ahead of time or, you know, if you know someone who is willing or if that kind of option is available in your area.
You also mentioned universal mail-in voting. That's been on the books a law, I believe, since the general elections back in 2020. Does Right. that help with some of these issues around physically getting to the polls since people can just mail in their ballot instead?
Yeah, it does. You know, but I don't think you can count on everyone getting their ballots in the mail in time. One of my sources for the story was Lindsay Owen, the executive director of Disability Rights Vermont, and she made some really good points about why mail-in voting doesn't exactly make all the barriers disappear. For one, there is a time window for actually getting your ballot in the mail. And it is election day now, so that has already passed. You would have needed to get your ballot in the mail about 2 weeks ago.
No one mail your ballot today. Let's be yes, very clear. Don't please. Put it in the mail today. Bring it in person.
Yes. Yes. At this point, the Secretary of State says you should walk your ballot into your polling place to ensure that it's counted. Owen also told me that some people just may prefer to vote in person.
Yeah, let's take a listen to a clip from that conversation you had with Lindsay Owen.
It's different to go to the polling place and see other community members voting alongside you and like feeling like you are really a part of that community versus voting from the living room because you don't have the services necessary to get you to the polling place or you don't have the money necessary to have a vehicle and you don't have public transportation access.
And Zoe, one of my favorite parts of Election Day is that energy that comes from folks running into each other, polling stations, getting that I've voted sticker, showing up with their kids. And listeners, we would love to hear what your voting experience was like. If you did indeed go somewhere in person today, you can call in and tell us about it at 800-639-2211 or shoot us an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Zoe, this issue around mail-in ballots and getting them into the mail on time came up when you looked into the voting process for incarcerated voters in our state, right?
Yes. And as you know, that's something our state is pretty unique in allowing. We are one of two states in D.C. that lets incarcerated people vote. Maine is the other. But these folks do need to jump through some additional hoops. They cannot use their correctional facility as a resident when they register to vote, which means they'll need to track down their previous Vermont address from before when they were incarcerated. And they also have to request an absentee ballot be sent to them for each election, which means they can't count on being automatically mailed a ballot. And then again, there's that two-week window before the election where essentially if you mail your ballot too late, it may not make it in time to actually be counted. And research has shown that in a couple of previous elections here, there have been really low estimated turnout rates among incarcerated Vermonters. For example, in the 2016 presidential election, the estimated turnout rate among incarcerated folks was 13%. And Michaela, I know you recently went to a candidate forum for incarcerated voters and actually got to speak with some of them.
Yeah, that's right. I went down to Southern State Correctional Facility a couple weeks ago where the Department of Corrections was hosting this first of its kind candidate forum. They invited all the candidates from the major parties for the races for Vermont governor, U.S. House, and U.S. Senate. And they got three candidates there, including Congresswoman Becca Ballant. And it was a really fascinating event. They were trying to highlight the fact that, as you said, Vermont is one of two states and D.C. where incarcerated people can vote, and also just work on kind of improving the access to information that incarcerated people have. It was moderated by Deputy Secretary of State Lauren Hibbert, and here is a clip of her from our conversation before the event.
We were really excited to be asked to moderate this event. Vermont is one of two states that allows incarcerated people to vote, and we're very committed to voter access for all individuals who are registered within Vermont. And it's exciting to think about providing resources to incarcerated individuals so that they're informed voters. It's really important that people, in order for it to be a true right, you have to be an informed voter. So it's exciting to think about this being the initial forum and then something that we can maybe build on in the future as something that just becomes part of every election in Vermont.
What do you think some of the barriers are there?
Well, we have universal vote by mail for our general election, but for our other two elections, the presidential primary and the statewide primary, if you're not at your residence, then you have to request an absentee ballot. So one thing I've heard is that requesting an absentee ballot while incarcerated is a challenge. So I think there's some things that we can think about and explore on how to simplify that process for people who are incarcerated.
The other kind of limiting factor with this event, Zoe, was that it happened in late October. So there wasn't actually time for the incarcerated folks to attend this forum and then use it to inform their vote and then mail in their ballot afterwards. So they would have had to mail it in before the event happened. But the Department of Corrections said that they're hoping in future years, if this happens again, that they can do it kind of earlier in the election cycle. But overall, it seemed like the event went really well. And I did, as you said, have a chance to talk to some incarcerated folks who are in the audience, including one man named Michael.
What a day-changing event, a month-changing event. What a beautiful opportunity for people like ourselves who are kind of disenfranchised, kind of feeling unseen, to have an opportunity to feel like what we feel matters, our opinions matter, that our vote can count. So yeah, I think it's a step in the right direction, and I think it's what a great showing by the candidates to come out and spend their time doing this. I feel like one of the biggest things that we lose coming into a facility like this is the feeling that we matter. So a lot of people don't even follow the election because they don't think that they're going to vote. They don't think that their vote counts. They don't think that they have a voice. So while we have the means to do it, I think the motivation is the bigger step in the direction. Hopefully this encourages that.
So again, that was Michael at the Southern State Correctional Facility in Springfield just a couple weeks ago at that candidate forum. Zoe, you in your reporting also highlighted this really interesting tool I hadn't heard of before that Vermont has that essentially creates an alternative way for voters to fill out their ballots privately. And it has a name that makes me feel like I'm in like a sci-fi movie. It's called the Omni-Ballot. What is it?
Yeah, so the OmniBallet tablet is an accessible voting system. It allows any voter who uses it to fill out their ballots privately. It has a touch screen, a button system, and audio instructions that can be helpful for people with certain types of disabilities. However, the Secretary of State, as well as some town clerks, told me that very few voters have actually used it since it became available in 2018. Now, Lindsay Owen said there may be some intimidation among voters about the technology and that it could be helpful to promote the system as a tool, you know, not just for people with disabilities, but for any voter. And every polling place in Vermont has the system. You can use it today. Actually, I used it today.
Oh, really?
Yes, I did. And, you know, it was really easy once the poll workers got it set up. I'm pretty sure I was like one of the only voters at that particular location that has asked to use it. But once we got it going, I just used the touchscreen to select my choices, and a fancy printer marked the circles for me on the ballot that I was mailed and had brought in. So, you know, it was pretty easy. And if you want to use it, just ask a poll worker about it when you arrive to vote.
That's awesome. Great on the field reporting with that today, Zoe. Let's take a call here. And listeners, if you want to tell us about your voting experience, our number is 800-639-2211. Alan is in Ludlow. Alan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for the conversation. It is awesome. Three quick things, I think. When they talk about voter fraud, you need to present certain documentation when you register to vote, whether it's motor voter registration, whether you go to your town clerk. So it's really, really hard, in my opinion, for someone to go into your town hall and vote on, you know, take your vote out of the hands of yourself.
Yes.
I think the mail-in ballots for all the registered voters in Vermont is nice. But at the same time, it creates an added burden to the towns, to the state, to count all those after polls close. So I prefer to go in, and whether or not I check anything off on my ballot, I still put it in the machine, and I watch that number click from 625 to 626, and I know that my ballot has been counted. I forget the third point, but
those are two great points. Alan, have you already voted today?
I have not. My motto is vote early, vote often. just kidding. I will be back in Ludlow around 4:30, and I like to vote toward the end of the day to see exactly how many of the 2,000 registered voters in Ludlow have voted on that day, just so I have an idea. And you know, I try to pay attention.
Well, Alan, you'll have to call back into Vermont Edition tomorrow and let us know how it goes. Thanks so much for calling in. We also got a question, Zoe, from a listener named Tatum via email, who says, is wondering if you can bring your child with you to vote. And also, if you prefer to vote in a booth but were mailed a ballot, can you still do that? I can answer the first one. You can definitely bring your child. My husband brought ours today. They can't vote, obviously, but they can watch you do it. And Zoe, what if you're mailed in a ballot but you want to vote in person?
Yeah, you absolutely can. Just, you know, ideally, you will bring in the ballot that you were mailed to your polling place, and you can fill it out there and put it into the tabulator. Yeah, so, you know, I know our Secretary of State has been saying BYOB, bring your own ballot. but if you lost your mail-in ballot, you can also get another one. You will have to sign an affidavit, but you will be able to vote day of.
An affidavit saying that you didn't also mail in your mail-in ballot. Got it. BYOB, I love that. Well, Zoe McDonald, thank you so much for talking to us about voter access to the ballot here on Election Day. You can check out Zoe's reporting on voting at vermontpublic.org. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
This Election Day, we are sharing your voting stories. Earlier this week, we asked you about the first time that you voted, and a number of folks sent us emails with their stories. We heard from one listener named Blythe who said this: I was sitting on my bed in my dorm room in Chicago, talking it over with my roommate from Florida, her friend from California, and another friend from Southern Illinois. I was the only one in the group old enough to vote, and everyone wanted to see my ballot. We talked about who was on it, and after much debate, I voted for Colin Powell. Honestly, I still stand behind that vote. Sharing ideas is one of the great benefits of going away to college. I'm thinking about offering extra credit to students who vote. All of mine are old enough. Well, thanks, Blythe, for sharing that story. If you want to tell us about the first time you voted, email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org or tell us what the polls were like today. Let's take time now to check in on a couple different polling places across our region. First up, we have Vermont Public reporter Nina Keck, who is in Rutland. Hey, Nina.
Hey, Michaela, how are you?
I'm good. All right. Are you one of those journalism monsters like me who just like adores Election Day and all of the adrenaline and anxiety that it brings?
I love it. And you were talking about the BYOB, the bringing your own ballot. I did that with my, I dropped mine off on my way to Rutland. And actually, I'm home now in Chittenden because I hit a bunch of different polling places. But I was at Rutland City at the Godnick Adult Center this morning at 7. And there was a sense of excitement. I saw a couple coming out just as I arrived there a few minutes after 7, and they were high-fiving each other because they were like, I'm voter number one. And my husband's like, I'm voter number two. that was something that I noticed talking to a lot of voters today was the way that the election this time, it felt exciting, like, you know, if you're a voting geek, it sounds like you and I are, it's fun on election day to go and vote and talk to voters. But so many people said this particular election felt different, more emotional, more important. Some told me they were really frightened and worried about how people would react to the outcome on both sides. Many told me they felt it was very historic. A gentleman in Mendon kind of compared it to Pearl Harbor and the Civil War and was really worried. But I also talked to some people that were very excited. For instance, Tracy Merrill was, I think, very joyful. And she was someone who brought her son. You were just talking a few minutes ago about can you bring your kids to vote. She had her 7-year-old son, Charlie, with her. And she came out of the polling place in Rutland with a huge smile on her face. And I think we've got this cut from her that I think just sort of says it all. So if we can play Tracy Merrill's comment here.
Absolutely. I feel like this is a very important election, and I'm really hoping that today I voted for the first female president. So it feels monumental. Absolutely.
Yeah, she and many of the other people I spoke to this morning, whether they were voting for Trump or Kamala Harris, all said it felt like a really monumental choice in time. Many people that I talked to today, Michaela, also said they were switching parties, that, you know, hey, I used to always think of myself as a Republican, but this time I didn't vote for Trump. This time I went for Kamala Harris. But then I also voted for Phil Scott. But then I also voted for David Zuckerman. They were kind of going all over the map. So I found that to be kind of interesting.
Yeah. And how open do you feel like folks were about who they were voting for? Did people generally seem like they were, you know, very prideful in sharing that, or kind of reticent and wanting to keep that information to themselves?
I heard both today. And, you know, some people would start talking to me and kind of couch it, but you could sort of get the sense from what they were saying, whether they leaned one way or the other. And when I pressed them, they said, okay, yeah, I'm voting for Trump, or I'm voting for Harris, and here's why. I didn't get the sense that people were that conflicted about telling me, especially since I was holding my microphone out and saying, by the way, spell your last name, please. You know, that puts people on the spot. But I do think, you know, just from my very unscientific chatting this morning with voters, I ran into more Trump supporters than I did Harris supporters this morning. Many of the Trump supporters that I talked to said that high taxes were really affecting their voting, and the heightened cost of living that they feel has hit Vermonters hard was a big reason that they were voting Republican, including at the top of the ticket and on down. And I think many pointed to the Democratic supermajority in the state house as one reason, you know, on down ballot items, they were sticking with Republican candidates.
You also talked to somebody named Dustin Ryan, who lives in Rutland with his wife and his kids. Could you tell us about him?
I'd be happy to. He was interesting. He's the first time I heard somebody saying specifically that he described himself as a very right-leaning conservative voter. He just bought a house in Rutland and said how shocking the cost of that house was and everything else that he's dealing with, the cost of living in general, for a young Vermonter trying to raise a family. He said he voted for Donald Trump and just said Vermont's Democratic supermajority does not match his political leanings. In fact, you know, he talked about how he's actually thought, he and his wife had thought about leaving Vermont, and this is what he said.
I mean, we've looked at moving, you know, before we bought this house on Litchfield. We were certainly looking to more conservative states, Texas, Georgia, you know, so some of the more conservative areas in the country, South Carolina, things like that.
But you stayed.
We stayed. Our parents are here. I grew up here, so.
Yeah, he did not want to leave because of his parents, the in-laws. His parents are aging, but that, you know, Vermont just doesn't feel right to him. So, but that was the first time I'd heard that, where he said, you know, I don't like the feel, and I'm looking for a more right-leaning state to move to. But I think, you know, Republican officials are hoping that within the county they may pick up some Republican seats in the state house. There are a couple of races that people are watching, and
That was my next question for you, Nina. Are there big local races there that folks brought up to you when they were at the polls today?
Well, I think one interesting race in Rutland City, Will Knott is serving in Rutland in the State House. He's served three terms in the Vermont House. He's from Rutland City, and he's very well known. He served a long time on the Rutland City Board of Aldermen as well.
A Democrat, right?
He is a Democrat. Sorry, I didn't get that right out in front. He's being challenged by a man named Chris Kieser as a Republican, and Chris Kieser hasn't been in politics before, but he has a strong pedigree. He's the son of a Vermont governor, former governor. And so I think people are watching that seat to say, is people's anger over rising taxes and the cost of living, will that seat flip? And that would be an interesting one to watch, I think.
Yeah, we're going to continue to cover the results of those down ballot races throughout the afternoon and evening here on Vermont Public. Let's go to the phones now. We have Silas calling in from Burlington. Silas, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I just wanted to say thanks, you guys, so much for your coverage and all the debates of those down ballot races. That I think in Vermont we have a lot of folks that kind of vote the same party all the way down the ticket, and in this state especially those labels don't really mean the same thing. We have a lot of candidates that just switch parties out of convenience and whatnot, and you know, listening to all the debates, there can be some concerning things that come out of the mouths of people that you might just normally vote for because of their party affiliation. So I voted feeling very well informed this morning thanks to your coverage, and haven't done that in any election. Felt like I knew really who I was voting for every single bubble I filled in.
Man, Silas, that means so much. Thank you so much for calling in. That's really what we have been trying so hard to do over these past busy months. And I'm so glad you felt informed at the ballot box. You also brought up something interesting about party affiliation and folks, you know, kind of voting down one party's ticket. Nina Keck, when you were talking to voters this morning, did you talk to any folks who split their ballot?
Oh, I talked to so many people who were all over the place, and I think that really stood out to me. I mean, you find that in Vermont down ballot items, I think people tend to vote for the person, or a lot of people tend to vote for the person more than straight, you know, red or straight blue. And I definitely talked to a lot of people that had, you know, been all over the ballot, Republican or Democrat, and kind of looked at me and said, you know, I don't identify as one or the other.
Hmm.
By the way, Silas's comment just made my day.
I know. It made me a little teary-eyed, Silas. Thank you. And Nina, thank you so much for your work. And you're going to keep plugging away, covering voting and election day in the Rutland area. Nina Keck in Chittenden right now. Thanks so much for calling in.
My pleasure.
We also just got an email from a listener named Audrey, who says that they are from the Northeast Kingdom but now live in London. They say, hello from the UK, and thank you to Vermont for making and continuing to make voting as an overseas voter super simple. For one reason or another, I've always been abroad for every presidential election since I turned 18. However, thanks to my town clerks and the state, I've been able to vote in every election from Sweden, Canada, and now England. A fun voting tradition tradition from the UK I think Vermont could adopt is polling station dogs. Everyone brings their dogs to vote with them, and the BBC even has a live page of voter-submitted dog photos. Audrey, that is an excellent idea. I'm going to submit it to the governor today. Listeners, tell us about what the polls look like in your area. You can call in at 800-639-2211. I was going to ask if you brought your kids, but now I want to know, did you bring your dog? Well, next up, we have reporter Erica Heilman joining us. She is currently in Barton. Erica, welcome.
Hi.
All right. How's your election day been? What's been going on?
It's good. It's been good. I'm camped out in the Barton Library in the American Girl doll section.
A perfect choice, I guess, for election day. Very, very patriotic.
Well, I mean, I was just over at the polls in Barton, and then I camped out, tried to find a place to work. I hit St. Johnsbury when they opened at 8, and that was a huge rush of people. And you were describing sort of people's states of mind, and I would say that stoic and earnest. And I would say that it was a pretty even split. I mean, nobody was very forthcoming about who they were voting for. There's a kind of weird kabuki about that. You know, you don't ask and don't tell. But what was interesting to me is just that there's this, you know, profound concern about the future and diametrically opposed perspectives on how to get there. That was what I felt.
Yeah. Did the polling place feel, you said it was earnest and stoic. Did it feel busy to you? Were people showing up to vote?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was very busy in both places. I mean, very busy by, kingdom standards, which is, not lines down the block. But, it was hustling in both places.
Can you tell us about some of the conversations you had?
So I talked with a young woman, Amber, who said that she just wanted more positivity, and she didn't really want to say more about who she was voting for, but she said that there's a lot of tension in her family about who is voting for who. She said she bartends at a local VFW, and I asked her what people were saying over there, and she said she was actually surprised that there was a lot of Kamala enthusiasm at the VFW. That surprised her. A lot of talk about concern about taxes, people feeling like they can't afford to stay. I was just listening to Nina talking about the people who are thinking to move away. And I talked to the guy, Bob in Barton, who said that if he were 15 years younger, he'd move to Australia, but he just can't swing it. There was a family in St. Johnsbury who brought their two little kids, and they were most concerned about reproductive freedom for women. And his name was David, and he was just very concerned for his wife and his daughter and his sisters and his mother, and also just that it was extremely important to them that their kids have a president that is an honorable person. And then Ray in Barton described Trump as the only honorable choice. There was a lot of talk about the border, some talk about the northern border, and a lot of talk just about the border in general. A lot of concern about, the border and taxes.
I would say maybe slightly more
Trump voters for me. Like Nina than Harris voters this morning.
It's interesting to hear all of those issues that folks highlighted for you, because Erica, one of my questions was going to be whether people were bringing up more local or state-based issues or really thinking nationally. And I just want to take a moment here to highlight one key race that's we've been following at Vermont Public in the area where you are today. Some listeners might be aware that earlier this year, Senator Jane Kitchell, who is a Democrat who's served in the Caledonia District for nearly two decades, she announced her retirement. And she was one of the chamber's most powerful members. She was chair of the Appropriations Committee, so she really, held the purse strings in a way. And it's opened up this rare opening, power opening in the district. And it's one of the Senate races where Republicans have seen this opportunity to potentially flip a seat from blue to red and weaken the legislature's Democratic supermajority. I mean, Governor Phil Scott has campaigned for the Republican, Scott Beck, who's currently a state rep. And he's running against Amanda Cochran, who's the head of a gender-based violence nonprofit in the NEK. It's a really interesting race, one we'll continue to report on here at Vermont Public throughout the afternoon. But Eric, I guess, yeah, that's my last question for you. Have any of these local races come up in your conversations, or is it really focused on more of the bigger picture, maybe more national concerns?
Well, there's one person told me that Amanda had stopped at her house, and she was most impressed that she got a personal home visit, and that if her husband voted, which he does not, that would have sold him. So that was one comment. And then another person just said Scott Beck, as if Scott Beck were a sentence. So that's my report on that race. Not much, but there you go.
There you go.
And then a lot of talk about Sam Douglas and Catherine Sims, too. Hmm. An interesting kind of a lot of commentary about, you know, who's from Vermont and who isn't in that race, and who that matters to and who it doesn't, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, really interesting. Well, Erica, we so appreciate you being on the ground there today in St. Johnsbury and in Barton. Thanks so much and good luck with the rest of your reporting today.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Michaela. Take care. Good luck.
And if you listening still need to vote, a reminder that you can bring your ballot to your local polling place until 7 p.m. And if you've misplaced that mail-in ballot, don't worry. You can still go to your polling place, get a new one. You just have to sign something so you haven't mailed in your mail-in ballot already. Polling places close at 7 p.m. And throughout today, you can keep tabs on Vermont Public's reporting and results as they come in at vermontpublic.org. To round out the hour this election day, we're going to take a little look outside of the borders of Vermont. To do that, we are joined by the hosts of Civics 101. It's a podcast from New Hampshire Public Radio that explains the basics of government and explores how exactly democracy works or doesn't. Nick Capodice and Hannah McCarthy, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you so much, Michaela. It's a delight to be here.
Thrilled to be here.
Awesome. Well, we would love to hear first how Election Day is going there in the Granite State. Did you both vote this morning? How'd you do it?
Well, I voted this morning, and it was a delight, and it never ceases to be a thrill after all these years. We kind of joke at Civics 101 that the I voted stickers like flare, like if you're working at a TGI Fridays or something. Hannah, you voted already as well, correct?
I did. I live in Massachusetts, so I voted early in Massachusetts, which is something that that New Hampshire does not actually permit. And my I voted sticker is on my phone case.
Where all shall the world remain.
Can see it. Yeah.
One of our producers has her I voted sticker on her cheek. I am looking at it right now. I'm really curious how long it's going to last.
I give it 75 minutes.
It's funny. It's sort of like high commitment, but also low commitment because it will fall off.
Let's start with the New Hampshire governor's race. This has been a really heated race that's been so interesting for me to read about. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so this is one of the 11 gubernatorial races going on right now in the United States. Kelly Ayotte and Joyce Craig. Kelly Ayotte is the Republican candidate. She's a former senator. And Joyce Craig is the former Democratic mayor of Manchester, New Hampshire. This is a very interesting race. And one thing I want to get kind of out of the way up top is that New Hampshire is quite famous for split ticket voting, right? So people will go into the booth and vote for one party for president and then just pick somebody from the other party for governor. This happens all the time in New Hampshire. And I don't see any reason why that won't, you know, happen today. Something that's quite fun about New Hampshire is we have the first of sort of election poll results, which is Dixville Notch, which was at midnight last night / this morning. And those polls were pretty interesting because it was 6 votes total out of Dixville Notch. 6 total.
So you can't really be anonymous there in Dixville Notch.
You can't really rather be anonymous in Dixville. I think the West Wing did a really funny episode sort of parodying Dixville
Notch. They didn't call it Dixville Notch, though.
They gave it a new name, like Grover's Corners. But no, it wasn't that. That's our town. But so what's interesting about Dixville Notch last night is that in the primaries, there were six votes. All six were for Nikki Haley, all six. And last night's results, three were for Donald Trump and three were for Kamala Harris. So, you know, that's an interesting data set, and it's all we have.
Oh, no. We're going to just hold on to that until 7 tonight.
But you asked about the governor's race.
Yeah.
The main thing in the most recent debate is, I want to say both candidates talk about very similar talking points, which is the border, which is about security, which is about affordable housing in New Hampshire, which is a national issue. But the big thing on the big debate was abortion. Kelly Ayotte, the Republican former senator, she was an original co-sponsor of a bill that would have banned abortion at 20 weeks. New Hampshire is the only state in New England that has not codified access to abortion. Joyce Craig said that she will codify Roe v. Wade, access to abortion, if she is elected governor. So this is a very interesting race, and turnout is huge so far that I've seen.
And while we have one congressional seat here in Vermont, New Hampshire, you lucky ducks, you have two. What should we know about the congressional race?
Just, you know, it's District 1 and District 2. We got two districts. Chris Pappas is the incumbent Democratic member, and he's running against Russell Prescott. Pappas has been in the he's been in the U.S. House since 2019. And the other district is Maggie Goodlander versus Lily Tang Williams. Goodlander is a former U.S. Deputy Assistant Attorney General. She's a member from the Democratic Party. And Lily Tang Williams is the former chair of the Colorado Libertarian Party. So these are both we don't know any exit polls yet, but neither of these really seem to be, according to recent polls, a toss-up. So this is one that's just kind of happening.
Well, let's venture out to some other parts of New England. In Maine, Senator Angus King is running for a third term. What should we know about that race?
Well, King's an independent, which is kind of interesting. He caucuses with the Democrats, but he is an independent. He is the far and away the person who's we're estimating will win the race, and you know, we also have a I was looking at the ballot measures on Maine as well, but so that race is there's nothing really too unexpected that we can see so far that's going to happen in that race.
Yeah.
We do also in Maine have two House races going on. So we've got Jared Golden, the Democrat, versus Austin Tarrow. That's a dead heat race. And then in the other district, in the first district, we've got Shelley Pingree versus Ronald Russell, and Pingree is way ahead. So you've got two very different congressional races happening in Maine's two districts as well.
Gosh, everything feels like it's neck and neck right now. The election anxiety is really getting to me. Well, I want to share an email we just got from a listener, Chris in Williston, Vermont, who says that they voted around 11:30 a.m. Parking lot was pretty full, but no real line to vote. There was a steady stream of voters. We dog-sit our daughter's dog, so Sully came with us and loved the attention. Bring your dog. All right, that is the theme of our show today, dogs at the voting booth. Briefly, upstate New York, in our listening area, there's a race there going on that folks here have been quite interested in, involving Elise Stefanik, the incumbent.
Right.
Could one of you give us a little overview of that?
Well, that race, actually, I have not been following that one too terribly closely, like, because there, so lately Hannah and I have been doing a show on, like, what's going to happen to the ballot for, in every state, and upstate New York has kind of flown under our radar in the last week. Like, can you tell us anything about that one?
Me? No. All right. Somebody in upstate New York, you better call in real quick. We are showing
Help us out here.
We do have New England for you. We've got New England.
New England centric.
We've got the pulse.
Well, tell us a little bit more broadly, instead of focusing on these specific states, what you all have been most interested in with your work at Civics 101. I mean, there's no dearth of conversations to be had about the state of national government, local government, the state of democracy. What are some topics you've been diving into?
Yeah, I mean, especially lately, of course, we've been focusing really closely on the election. And when it comes to sort of looking at the election writ large. We've been thinking a lot about the fact that despite, you know, all of the misinformation and disinformation, despite the many claims of fraud and the many, many fears swirling around, our election system is more secure now than it has ever been. Mm-hmm. And I also love to point out to people that it's really boring. People think that it's really exciting, but I think that the important buzzword here is discretion or lack thereof. Your election officials do not have discretion, right? So they're not allowed to just do whatever they want with your ballots. They have to follow a process. And what I think is really sort of delightful is, you know, when someone is really concerned about the election system in their state, maybe they run to become an election official in their state. And I think a lot of people find, and I have spoken to people who find, that what they anticipated being a chaotic mess where there are a lot of big issues happening is actually the exact opposite. And there are a lot of, you know, very rote administrative duties that have to be performed in order to count your ballots. So I encourage everybody, go to your election official's website. In most states, that's the Secretary of State, not in all states. And just, you know, you can also call them and say, hey, I have a concern. And I almost guarantee you they have anticipated your concern and they know, you know, how to answer that. They know how to tell you that it's going to be okay. Or, you know, you don't have to run for office. You can always volunteer at your local polling place and see that it is not nefarious, right? Like there's far less going on when it comes to what officials are doing than it might be projected from, you know, social media or elsewhere on the internet, or candidates who are saying, you know, it's a big problem. It's actually far less of a problem than it seems it is.
Hmm. Well, we have a couple, just a couple minutes left here, and I would love for you two to help us kind of look forward to this great unknown that begins tomorrow. Is there a topic that you're thinking you're probably going to want to try to dive into on the podcast, or something that you have been talking about together where you say, you know what, this is going to be really at the top of our minds, no matter what the results of, say, the presidential elections are?
Yeah, it's very interesting, Michaela, is that one of the things we keep returning to is the word norms, which is kind of strange. But like norms, you know, presidential norms, democratic norms, you know, the peaceful transfer of power, all these things that we've sort of taken for granted for a very long time are sort of not to be taken for granted anymore. I think that's something we're going to continue to hammer on the show. In addition, and this is the big thing, so social studies teachers across the country, we work with them to find out, like, hey, what do you need episodes on for your students, you know, in California or New York or Texas or anywhere? And the big one, like the big one of all right now, is civil discourse. That is what everybody is concerned about, is how can students and us, you know, let's not forget the grown-ups in the room too, how can we have conversations, you know, without getting in fights? How is that possible? And sort of a return to, you know, not civility necessarily, but civil discourse, right? That's something we're going to be focusing on in the weeks to come, too.
Yeah, and I just want to share, I spoke to a beloved frequent guest on our show recently who said, you know, she was trying to explain to her students what civil discourse actually is. Mm-hmm. And she said, civil discourse doesn't start with opinions. Civil discourse starts with facts. And if someone comes to you with something that's not a fact, you can't really have civil discourse around that, right? So I think that a lot of us are falling into this problem where we're speaking with someone who, you know, maybe we're getting in a fight with because they're saying something that, as far as we can tell, is not true. And you know what? Like, that's okay. You don't have to find the civil discourse in there. But I think our hope from Civics 101 is to just put as much true information out into the world so that people have those raw tools to then engage in that civil discourse that I think would benefit all of us.
Hannah McCarthy and Nick Capodice are the hosts of Civics 101 from New Hampshire Public Radio. Hannah and Nick, thanks so much for calling in today and talking to us about your work.
Thank you so much, Michaela.
Thank you, Michaela. It was a delight.
Well, that is all the time that we have for Vermont Edition today, but our election coverage is far from over. Be sure to tune in to All Things Considered at 4. 7 o'clock, I'll be back on air with Bob Kinzel to share results as they come in. You can also check out our live blog on vermontpublic.org or tune in to Vermont Public's TV channel starting at 6 tonight for a special edition of PBS NewsHour. Lots to come this election day. Today's show was directed by Mary Angish and Aaliyah Papes. Our managing producer is John Ahrens. Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro are our producers. Rick Barrett was our call screener today, and our theme music is by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening. Happy voting, and we will catch up again soon.